agid godlechu il nay tsakh netzukhim kedishos khuna bavagish ledoy budoy nagid godlechu il nay tsakh netzukhim kedishos khuna
I thank you all for joining us this evening, dedicated to the memory of my father, grandfather, and brother, depending on your family connection here, and of course, friend and acquaintance, Tzvi Meir Ben Moshe Yonatan. We're going to start not with the actual lecture, but rather, with your permission, with the actual dedication more physically that we dedicated in his memory. A year ago, we dedicated a winery in the memory of my father here in Efrat. It's not a winery that's a business to make money, but rather an educational winery, whose goal is to try to get children involved both in the production of the wine hands-on and eventually to bring wine home for Kiddush on Shabbos. And I have to admit that this particular way of doing it was indeed the way that my own father basically regulated his own life. Namely, he was very particular in doing things on his own. So his own gardening, his own repairs in the house, building his own shelves and whatnot. And we thought this would be a very appropriate dedication so that kids would be hands-on involved in the production of wine and ultimately being able to, as time goes on, obviously enjoy the fruits of their labor. So if you bear with me, if you look at your screen right now, we're going to show a small clip of the progress since that dedication about a year ago. I thank Yaakov, who's here with us. Yaakov, you're here. Just let me know you're here. Yes, I see your hand. Yaakov prepared a short clip that, with his permission, I added a few things to make it appropriate, at least for the Ramah of my own father. So from this perspective, it was a joint effort. So if you look at the screen now, let's begin.
A year ago, we dedicated the winery, Yekef Tzvi, in memory of our beloved Tzvi Grunstein. So come with me. We'll start off in the vineyard.
All right, we are pruning our vineyard here.
Yeah.
This is a wine vineyard, that therefore it's being pruned flat on one level that'll grow up. We are making sure that every branch that comes out will provide two beautiful bunches of grapes, and we don't want too many bunches on every vine, because the more grapes you have on each vine, the less sugar.
So now the vineyard is completely pruned. We planted this vineyard 3 years ago on Tu B'Shvat. We're very proud of the vineyard. It's really designed professionally. We have 100 vines here of Cabernet Sauvignon.
This is the winery. It's in the lower section of the farm. As you can see, we have the main structure, which is built out of a shipping container, and I'll show you the inside immediately. And outside we have a workspace that in the summer will be covered with a shade, and there we'll actually do the crushing and making, turning the grapes into grape
juice. This is the winery inside. Let's start with the important things. In the back, we have a crusher.
This crushes the grapes into a mix of skin, seeds, and juice, and pulp, of course. And then we bring it all over here. Actually, we put it into the barrels first. It'll sit there for a couple of weeks while it goes to the first fermentation. Once that's done, we want to get all the solids out, so we'll put it into this pressing tool, which, using lovely amounts of force, will press out all the young wine and leave all the solid products behind. And after that, we'll put it into bigger containers. We'll bring
stainless steel containers.
And here the wine will sit until it's ready to be put into oak barrels. Oak barrels we will purchase next year in August, September, when we're ready to fill the wine. And then we'll be ready to go with our first batch.
From this perspective, with your permission, I'd like to now transport into the shir that I prepared in memory of my father, Zichrono Levracha Lechaye Olam Haba. My father's yahrzeit is on Rosh Chodesh Adar, Aleph Adar. This evening is Lamed Shvat, but quite frankly, every year we're going to have the problem, not just because it comes out on Shabbos, but because every single year, Rosh Chodesh is not a time for Hespedim and not for Ta'aniyot. It's not a time for eulogies or for fasting. And therefore, it's going to be a challenge every year of how to dedicate a shir in his memory. I admit that my father had the same problem with his own father, simply because his own father died on Purim. So indeed, we had that same quandary with how to dedicate it and not impinge upon Purim. And therefore, just like last year, I'd like to take a topic that has to do with Rosh Chodesh, and we can learn it together and see indeed what we can do in order to understand parts of Rosh Chodesh, because it happens to be a day that's very much, I would say, marked in mystery. And I'll explain what I mean in a moment. Rosh Chodesh happens to be a day where davening is longer, and yet once davening is over, there's really not so much relevance to Rosh Chodesh. It's a regular day. And therefore, it's so marked with mystery that I think that I'm pretty sure that every year we can find something new about it. And this year, I wanted to deal with the two pictures you see of my father here, Tefillin and Rosh Chodesh, and what we can learn about Rosh Chodesh and Musaf in general. So as you can see, I'm going to start off with the smog. The smog with Rav Moshe Mikutzi. If you know who Rav Moshe Mikutzi was, we're talking about one of the Tosfos that are printed in the Gemara. Rav Moshe Mikutzi was part of the very, very famous disputation that led to the burning of the Talmud in 1242 in Paris. So he's a very important figure in the 13th century. And he writes something that others write, but I'm going to quote it from his book called Sefer Mitzvot Gadol. He says, Kol echad miYisrael, eino Yehudi shalem, ela im ken yesh lo shtei edim shehu Yehudi. Veshabbat nikret ot, patur adam milahaniach tefillin, kidai sheyesh lo shtei edim shehu Yehudi. Eidut Shabbat ve'eidut mila. Says the Smag that every single day, a Jewish male has to have two signs that shows that he's Jewish. The first sign is that he ultimately is wearing his bris milah, his circumcision, and number two, tefillin. But Shabbat is good enough even without tefillin, and therefore on Shabbat, you don't need the tefillin in addition to your actual brit milah. So on Shabbat, it's good enough to walk around without tefillin, but during the week, we need those two signs, and many, many others say it as well. Now, before I continue, for some reason, I don't see myself on the screen. I just want to make sure. Do you see me on the screen?
Yes.
Okay, that's fine. As long as you see me, I don't need to look at myself. That's torture to look at yourself. In any case, The Shulchan Aruch says, indeed, Nahagu Shalala Anicham Kol Hayom, even though that you should have these two signs on all the time, every single day, even though we should have it on all the time, ultimately we don't have it on all the time for various reasons. One of them is that indeed we couldn't be careful to keep its sanctity. So that's what we do every day. Shabbat and Yom Tov, we don't wear tefillin because we have the sign of the actual day plus our circumcision. But when it comes to a regular weekday, we do. We should have him on all day, but at least we have him on in the morning once a day to fulfill these two signs that should be on all the time. Saying, without further ado, the Shulchan Aruch says on the bottom of what you see in front of you, B'yom Rosh Chodesh, Chotzim Otam, Kol Dem, Tfilat Musaf. However, on Rosh Chodesh, we take him off before Musaf. So everybody here knows that when it comes to Rosh Chodesh in a regular shul, and if you're not in a shul, and wherever you're davening right now, be it at home, be it in a backyard, be it in some sort of a parking lot, the bottom line is we do take off our tefillin, and we take it off in order to daven Musaf. From this perspective, it's rather strange that we do that because, quite frankly, we usually have it on for davening. And indeed, there's two schools of thought as to why. Why do we take off our tefillin on Rosh Chodesh, namely tomorrow, before Musaf? The Beit Joseph, Rav Yosef Karo, 16th century author of the Shulchan Aruch, he says, and I quote, "V'shamati shahatam mishum de'be'oto tefila omrim keter. Ve'ein nachon lihiyot be'oto sha'a keter de tefillin." So, says the Beit Joseph, that indeed we take off our tefillin for a very technical reason. In Musaf, we're going to say Kedusha. In Kedusha, we're going to use the words Keter. Starting with the paragraph of Kedusha, according to the Nusach Sfard and the Sfardim, Keter yitnu lecha Hashem Elokeinu. We give you God a crown. And since we're going to say the word crown, says the Beit Joseph, it's not suitable, inappropriate to have on a different crown, namely your tefillin. So therefore, says the Beit Joseph, we take off our tefillin, and on Musaf, we only talk about one crown, not the crown of tefillin on our heads, but rather the crown that's on God's head. Very technical reason that the Beit Joseph says we take off our tefillin. On the other hand, the Mishnah Berurah, who's known as the Chafetz Chaim, who's also known as Rav Yisrael Meir Kagan, the Chafetz Chaim in his Mishnah Berurah says in the name of the Levush the following words: "The kemo de ein minichin tefillin b'yom tov mishum sheyom tov be'atzmo ot kemo kein yesh linhog berosh chodesh al kol panim b'sha'at musaf shemaskirim musafei hayom d'oto schira gam kein hu ke'ein ot." Says the Mishnah Berurah that just like we don't put on tefillin on Shabbos and Yom Tov, when you get to Musaf, you act as if you're on a Shabbos or a holiday and you take off your tefillin. Very interesting perspective that for at least the moments that we say Musaf, we take off our tefillin and act as if it's a holiday. So according to the Beit Yosef, the reason is technical, but according to the Mishnah Berurah, it's more, I would say, experiential. Whoever didn't mute their microphone, if they can please mute it, we hear you. Thank you. The Mishnah Berurah says that it's experiential. Namely, you take off your tefillin because it's like a Shabbos and Yom Tov. And as we said previously, on those days, you don't put on tefillin. So while you're davening Musaf, it's like Shabbos and Yom Tov. So before Musaf, it's not. Perhaps even after Musaf, it's not. But during Musaf, it's like you're in a different world, a different realm, and therefore it's like Shabbos and Yom Tov. Pretend that you're in a different world and you take off your tefillin. This being the case, it seems interesting that there'd be obviously a ramification between the Beit Joseph and the Mishnah Berurah. And what would that be? See, the Beit Yosef wouldn't say this ramification because in his shul, that he didn't call a shul, I'm sure, because shul comes from Yiddish, he called it a Beit Knesset. Obviously, this wasn't a ramification. It's a ramification for us simple Jews, namely people that didn't daven in the Beit Yosef's synagogue. What's the ramification? Anyone? Take a wild guess.
Nusach Ashkenaz, you don't say Keter.
Thank you, Benji. Nusach Ashkenaz, you don't say Keter. You don't say those words that the Beit Yosef says is the reason to take off your tefillin. So indeed, this is a ramification according to some. If you look here on the next slide, you'll see that according to the Ramah and the Taz, the picture here on the right is the Taz, or at least the alleged picture of the Taz, he says that V'dafka b'makom shomrim b'musaf kedushat keter. So if you're davening Nusach Ashkenaz and you don't say the words keter, crown, you can leave on your tefillin. And indeed, the Taz, the son-in-law of the Bach, the Taz says in one generation after the Shulchan Aruch was printed, we're talking about the 1600s. Unfortunately, he was part of, not a victim of, but he suffered through the Khmelnytsky massacres of 1648. The Taz says, V'shamati b'shem gadol ador echad, shelo hayachol tzam b'musaf, kivan she'en omrim keter. So very simply, if Rav Yosef Karo is correct, and the whole reason is technical, then if you don't say those technical words, you don't have to take off your tefillin. But the Ramah himself, who davened Nuskas Ashkenaz, the Ramah, who lived simultaneously, as you know, at the time of the Shulchan Aruch, Rav Moshe Isserlish, in the 1500s, he says, Miu, nohagim l'sarkam kol demusaf b'chol makom. So says the Ramah, even though I'm Mr. Ashkenaz, after all, I am the person that added the Ashkenazic customs to the code of Jewish law, I am telling you that even if you don't say keter, you take off your tefillin. And what I want to understand this evening is the Ramah and this whole idea that the Mishnah Berurah says that when you daven Musaf, it's like Shabbos and Yom Tov, and you don't need your tefillin. Because if it's all technical with the word keter, then indeed, if you don't say keter, maybe you can leave it on. But quite frankly, the Ramah perplexed me because he's basically saying that there's a very big difference on the very same day between Shachris and Musaf. I can well understand that there's a difference between different days in Judaism. Namely, today is Thursday, and 2 days it's Shabbos. On Shabbos, with all the various positive commandments and negative commandments that we fulfill, obviously it's a very special day, and I understand it's different from Thursday, in which all these positive and negative commandments don't apply. But on the very same day, namely tomorrow, Rosh Chodesh, Shachris is going to be different than Musaf, says the Ramah. Shachris, you leave your tefillin on. Musaf, you take it off because it's as if we're in a holiday. Why? Because we're saying Musaf. And that perplexed me, and I want to understand it together with you this evening. But the assumption of the Ramah and the Mishnah Berurah and all those that daven Nusach Ashkenaz and don't say Keter, is that when you utter Musaf, it has a transformative power to take a part of your day and make it different from what's before and what's after. During the time you're davening Musaf, be it those 10 minutes, you're in a different realm. And indeed, it's not unique to say that Musaf is different than Shachris. And let's see two examples of that we have every week. Number one, saying Yismichu b'malchutcha. So as everybody here probably knows, and if you don't know, just shake your head as if you do, the words Yismichu b'malchutcha shomrei Shabbat v'korei oneg, be happy, those that keep Shabbat and make the day into a day of enjoyment, is a beautiful paragraph. There's many songs that have been composed to it. However, there's a big difference between different people with different sitters. If you daven Nusach Sfard, and I believe the Sfardim as well, you say that paragraph Friday night, Shabbos morning at Shachris, and at Musaf, I'm not sure about Mincha. If you daven Nusach Ashkenaz, on the other hand, you only say it at Musaf. And the question is why? So if you look on the right side of the screen, you'll see a picture of Rav Baruch Epstein. Rav Baruch Epstein, I have to say, is a very interesting individual because there's a word in Yiddish that some of you know. It's called fablungent. Fablungent, it's hard for me to translate. It means confused. It means mixed up. It means the opposite of order. So if you, Rav Baruch Epstein was a very fascinating individual. He touched the 20th century. That's when he passed away. He wrote a Torah Tmima, which is a beautiful interpretation on the Chumash, bringing all the Midrashei Chazal based on Psukim. It's the most orderly way of learning the Chumash with the words of our sages. Epitome of order. But he also wrote another book called the Pnei Baruch. This is not the Pnei Baruch, which is the laws of mourning. This is an autobiographical book called Pnei Baruch, which has a little bit of biographies, a little bit of Lashon, a little bit of other things. And this book is totally fablungent. There's no order in it. He starts with the Dvar Torah. He goes on to talk about Dikduk. Then he goes further to talk about his aunt and how he used to torment her because she learned Torah. There's no order in it. So you have two Rav Baruch Epsteins, the Torah Tmima and the Pnei Baruch. So Rav Baruch Epstein, in his Torah Tmima, this is the orderly book he wrote, writes as follows. Ve'amru b'Shabbat kuf lamed amud aleph. It says in Maseches Shabbos, page 138, kol mitzvah shekiblu Yisrael aleihem besimcha, adayin osim ota besimcha. Any commandment that the Jewish people accepted upon themselves with happiness, they continue to do with happiness. It's what I tell my students all the time. First impressions count. You see, when you did the mitzvah for the first time and it was happy, then you're going to continue to do it with happiness. So says the Torah Tmima, v'im kein bevadai, ra'u liyot besimcha b'shabbat, v'chen yiduyak l'shon ha'tfilah, yismichu b'malchutcha shomrei shabbat. When the Jews originally accepted upon themselves the sanctity of Shabbat, it wasn't because God commanded them at Sinai. It was one parsha before. It was in Parshat B'Shalach, before the parsha where we received the Torah in Parshat Yitro that we read last week. And therefore, it was accepted upon the Jewish people with much joy, with much happiness. And therefore, in davening, we say, Yismichu v'malchutcha. From this perspective, you could say it Friday night, Shabbos morning. It's the same Shabbos. It's the Shabbos that we accepted with joy and happiness. And we're going to continue to be in joy and happiness throughout the day. Rav Soloveitchik, on the other hand, disagreed. Rav Soloveitchik, 1903 to 1993, the Rebbe of my own Rebbe, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, the Rebbe of many of your own rabbis. Rav Soloveitchik says, V'nira, this is quoted in his name, Rav Tzvi Reichman, Shebi idan hava'at korbanot, Musafei achag, chal din kvod yom tov b'migdash v'afilu b'chol amoed. Says Rav Soloveitchik, and I'll say it to you in the words I heard in his name from my own Rebbe, Rav Lichtenstein, that when you bring the Korban Musaf, the additional sacrifices in honor of Shabbos, Yom Tov, that's when in the Beis HaMikdash, it was a regular, beautiful Shabbos and Yom Tov at those moments. Namely, it was a holy time for those particular moments when the Kohen brought the sacrifice, the Levi sang the Psalm of the Day unique for that day, and the Jewish people prayed to God, the ones on duty, that it would be accepted. So this particular Trinity, Kohanim, Leviim, Yisraelim, during the time that Musaf was brought, it could have been on Chol HaMoed or Rosh Chodesh. Those moments were transformed into like a holiday. And therefore, says Rav Soloveitchik, v'hine min hagenu, and here our custom, min hagashkenaz, obviously Rav Soloveitchik, Lithuanian, daven nusach ashkenaz, lomar yismichu v'malchutcha, rak betfilat ha-musaf b'shabbat, ki dafka b'migdash, yesh simcha b'shabbat, mishum ha-ba'at korbanot ha-musaf, ha-ma'anika k'durashat yom miyuchedet b'shabbat b'migdash, aval lo b'gvulim. Says Rav Soloveitchik, only in the Beis HaMikdash, when they brought the Korban Musaf, it was like a Yom Tov. And on Yom Tov, we're obligated to be happy. Only then, outside the Beis HaMikdash, the Jewish people are keeping Shabbos throughout the world, even within Israel, the Holy Land. It's a very holy day. It's a special day. It's a day of enjoyment, of oneg, but not of simcha. Simcha was only in the Beis HaMikdash and when you brought the Korban Musaf. And therefore, says Rav Soloveitchik, you only say Yismechu v'malchutcha, be happy in Musaf. So example number one, how Musaf can be different than Shachris, that even on Shabbos, when you brought the Korban Musaf in the Beis HaMikdash, there was Simcha, and without a Beit HaMikdash, without a temple, even in our davening, we connote the word happiness only in Musaf. So Musaf does have this power. We started out by saying we take off our tefillin because it's like a Shabbos and a holiday, and we went on to say that only when you daven Musaf is there the notion of happiness, of simcha on Shabbos. Namely, not at Shachris, not at Ma'ariv, not at Mincha. Only when you bring the Korban Musaf. Second example, and those that are listening from outside of Israel will appreciate this more than those in Israel. I'm going to start by saying this is a pet beef, not just of me, I'm a nothing, but of rabbis throughout the generations. Why is it that outside of Israel, the Kohanim only bless the people with colloquially known as duchening on Yom Tov and only on Musaf of Yom Tov? I believe it comes out to 13 times a year only. And no one really knows the good answer for it. But that's not the topic this evening. The topic this evening is how Musaf is so strong that you can't go by without duchening. And I'll explain. If you look at the source sheet in front of you, the Ramah says, "Va'afilu b'yom tov, ein osim kapayim ela b'tfilat Musaf." They only duchen, according to the Ramah, and this is the custom of Ashkenazic shuls outside of Israel, only at Musaf of Yom Tov. Why? Technical reason. So when I was a kid, and I asked this question, I forgot the teacher that told me, on Yom Tov, you're besimcha. You're obligated in being happy. And only when you're happy can you duchen. Now that assumption is probably incorrect. Namely, only when you're happy you can duchen. But that is the assumption of the Ramah. However, my teacher didn't tell it to me like the Ramah. Did the Ramah say that because it's Yom Tov, and because you're happy you can duchen? That's not what he said. What did the Ramah say? Anyone want to share? Why are we more happy at Musaf than we are at Shachris on the first day of Pesach?
Because you're leaving shul.
Say again?
Because you're leaving shul and going home to have your nice meal.
Ah, beautiful. Because you're going to leave shul. You ever see a Jew at the end of davening? He's the happiest man in the world. He knows it's over. Says the Ramah, that's the reason why you're happy. Musaf means, I'm getting closer to my meal. Kiddush is around the bend. Therefore, we're happy. It's not because of this spirituality of happiness of Yom Tov. It's because the meal is not far away. That's the reason why the Ramah says we only duchen at Musaf. You want to be happy? Tell a Jew, davening's almost over. You want an example of this? Anyone that comes to shul on a Monday or Thursday, there happens to be an excuse not to say Tachnun, but people didn't know about it coming in. It wasn't Tu Bishvat. It wasn't Pesach Sheni. They come into shul, and right before they say the long Tachnun on a Monday or Thursday, someone bangs on the bima and says, there's a bris. There's a Sheva Brachas. We're going to skip Tachnun. I can't begin to tell you the happiness. I can't define it in words. So the Ramah says, same thing, Yom Tov, long davening, you know Kiddush is around the bend, you're happy. That's the reason why we duchen at Musaf. Nothing to do with Musaf. But the Shulchan Aruch, in my opinion, doesn't agree. Because the Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Berurah both seem to say that there's something very special about Musaf. Now, even though the Shulchan Aruch himself, Rav Yosef Karo, duchened every day, he says, Shematchil shliach tzibur retzei kol kohen shebebeit ha-knesset ne'ekar mimkomo la'alot la'duchan abalim lo akar raglav beretzei shuv lo ya'ale. The Shulchan Aruch quotes a law from Masechet Sota that says that in a shul, when the chazan starts the words retzei, in between the word retzei and ha-machazir shchinato le'tzion, that paragraph, the Kohanim have to move their feet towards the front of the shul in preparation of duchening. If they didn't, they can't duchen. Why is that? Explains the Mishnah Berurah, because we're trying to reenact what used to be in the temple. What used to be in the temple? It says that Aharon, the first Kohen, together with Moshe, was there on the first day that the temple, or to be more precise, the Mishkan, the first temple, the tabernacle, was open for business. And in Parshat Shmini, it says that Moshe Rabbeinu, together with Aharon, were there to open up the temple for business. They're sacrificing the sacrifices. And it says, Vayisa Aharon et Yadav el Ha'am Vayevarechem. And in the same pasuk, it says, Vayeret me'asot achatat, etc. Says the Mishnah Berurah, as you could see, when did he bless the people? Right when he was finished sacrificing. So says the Shulchan Aruch, based on the Gemara, when do you duchen? When you have something that connects what you do in shul to sacrificing sacrifices in the Beit HaMikdash. What's the closest we get? So you go in a shul, it may be a small temple, but there's no sacrifices going on. The closest you get is the words Ritzei Hashem Elokeinu. The word Ritzei means Ritzui, namely God find favor. In the Chumash, the only time we find that term is in reference to sacrifices. So when you talk about something that's reminiscent of sacrifices, and you mention it, return your holy sacrificial work to your temple, to the Beis HaMikdash, then the Kohanim say, oh, now that we have a connection to sacrifices, now we can prepare ourselves to duchen. So as you could see, the Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Berurah say, this particular idea of duchening is connected to the fact that you're trying to reenact what happened in the temple. So I'm going to add to their words, maybe this is the reason why in Chutz La'aretz, outside of Israel, the Ashkenazic custom is to only duchen at Musaf. Because Musaf is indeed totally about returning to the Beis HaMikdash and having sacrifices again. And then it's appropriate to duchen because you're in a different realm. You're not in the reality of not having a temple like a chachris. You're in a hopeful reality of the return of a temple, the return of the Beis HaMikdash, and everything that came with it. And therefore, all the laws of duchening revolve around the fact that when you talk about sacrifices, ritzei, you mention it, then you duchen. Then you have to start moving towards the front of the shul. And maybe that's the reason why it's only Musaf and not Shacharis. So to sum up until now, we saw that Musaf has a very, very, I would say, amazing power. One, on Rosh Chodesh, when you get to Musaf, you pretend that it's like Shabbos and Yom Tov, you remove your tefillin. Two, we said that only in Musaf you say Yismichu v'malchutcha because it's reminding us of the Beit HaMikdash where there was proper simcha, proper happiness on Shabbos. And number three, only in Musaf and only on Yom Tov for that matter do the Kohanim duchen because it's totally and utterly connected to sacrifices, connected to what was, not to the reality that we have today, but rather to a reality that once was and will be. So if this is the power of Musaf, we take off our tefillin on Rosh Chodesh, that's the only time we duchen in Chutz La'aretz, and that's the only time we say Yismechu v'malchutcha, according to Nusach Ashkenaz, this leads me to believe that there's a very big difference between Shacharis and Musaf. Shacharis and Musaf are much, much different from one another. And I'll explain it based on the following story. In Masechet Shabbos, no teacher ever reprimanded me with this, but in Masechet Shabbos, one rabbi reprimanded the other with this. Rabba, chazya l'rav himnuna dekamarich bitzlute. Amar, menichin chaye olam v'oskin b'chaye sha'a. So Rabba said to Rav himnuna, you're doing a terrible thing. You're davening too long. My whole life, never did anyone ever tell me I'm davening too long. They told me I'm talking too long. They told me I'm wasting my time. But if you were davening long, no one ever reprimanded you. In the Gemara, no good. Why? Minichin chayei olam ve'oskim b'chayei sha'ah. You could have been learning Torah. Torah is eternal. And what are you doing? You're davening for what is right now in the present. You're davening to have more money. You're davening to have nachas from your children. You're davening to have health. These are things that are in the present, but they're not eternal. So therefore, why are you wasting your time about things that are just in the present and you're not going to things that are in the eternal realm? I have a question. Do you think Rabba would say this to Rav Yimnuna if he was davening Musaf? I would like to submit, no. Only with regard to Shachris, because there's a big difference between Shachris and Musaf. In Shachris, we deal with the real, with the reality. The halacha of Shachris is very simple. And you look on your screen, Meseches, Brachot, Daf Lamed Ben Amud Aleph says, Lo'olam yisader adam shvachol shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'akarkach yitpalel. Davening does not mean praise. We do that first, but rather request. What are we requesting? We're requesting things that we don't have right now in the reality. So for example, the first and foremost things the entire world needs right now is health. And we daven, Refa'enu Hashem b'nei rafei. Secondly, many people are out of work. They need money. Barech aleinu. Many people need a lot of knowledge to get through this period of time of COVID. Atachonein l'adam dat. We're all dealing with realistic requests based on the reality of life right now in front of my nose. That's Shachris. As a matter of fact, if you had a Shachris without requests, it's a question if it's even a davening, because it says here explicitly you have to have requests. Therefore, on Shabbos, when the sages removed the 13 blessings of request, the question is asked by many poskim, maybe we're not davening. I have to say it's the most funniest question I've ever heard, because davening is the longest on Shabbos. And imagine after all of that, someone would have told you, you're not davening, there's no requests. So Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Ovadia Yosef and others have answered that question by saying, if you look carefully at the Amidah, there is a request in all the Amidahs of Shabbos, and starts with the words Elokeinu v'Elokei Avoteinu Retzei Navim Nuchateinu. But quite frankly, Shachris without request is not a davening, because Shachris talks about our needs today, the real. Not so Musaf. Musaf talks about the ideal. Musaf is not talking about what I need right now in my house, in my community, in my school, in my shul, in my world. Musaf talks about what I should need, or to be more precise, the ideal. Therefore, regarding Musaf, indeed, it's very difficult to have kavana at Musaf. When you daven Shachris, I have to admit, even though it's hard to have kavana when you daven, the Shulchan Aruch paskins, im ratzalo osif b'chol bracha mi'ayim tzayit, me'ena bracha, mosif. If you have a specific need, Shachris, add it in. Keitzad, what does he mean? Hayalo cholem mevakesh ala brachamim bebirkat refa'enu. I know people that are sick. So you get to refa'enu, it becomes very real. I think about all the people that are sick. I mention their names. I even say what sickness they have. And I say, please God, go ahead and heal them. Give the proper mindset to the doctors, to the nurses, to the health professionals to heal these people. Not so in Musaf. When you get to Musaf, there's first of all a question if women even have to daven Musaf for technical reasons that has to do with what we're going to read this Shabbos. They weren't obligated to give the machatzita shekel, that half shekel, which bought the sacrifices of Musaf. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva Eger, on the left side of the page, quotes the Besamim Rosh, which is a forgery of the Rosh's responsum, but it is a responsum of a rabbi called Rabbi Berlin, who says that since women didn't contribute to that particular fund that brought the Musaf, maybe they don't have to daven Musaf. More than that, the Shulchan Aruch paskins that when you get up in the morning, as soon as you get up in the morning, Every human being that gets up and is Jewish has to wash their hands three times, has to say a series of blessings, has many things they have to do in the morning. However, that's the real. The ideal, says the Shulchan Aruch, in his first chapter in the Code of Jewish Law, namely, a person gets up in the morning, he didn't even wash his face. Ra'oi lecho yirei shamayim, shiyem metzer v'doeg al churban beis hamikdash. Every person that's a God-fearing Jew should feel sorry that there's no beis hamikdash. Now, how many people on a regular basis feel sorry that there's no beis hamikdash? I feel sorry that I know people that are sick with COVID. Namely, I feel sorry for things that are real, that are realistic. I don't feel sorry for things that are dreams, that are things that are not even realistic in our world yet. So quite frankly, says our Shulchan Aruch, only a Yerei Shamayim, a God-fearing Jew, might, ra'ui, that he should think about the Beis HaMikdash in the morning. Or in my words, it's much easier to be worried about a Shachrit than a Musaf. A Shachrit is about the realistic needs today. A Musaf is about the non-realistic needs, but rather the ideal needs of the Jewish people. To once again be together in the land of Israel. To once again have a focal place called a temple. To have sacrifices. To have Jewish sovereignty without question. Not to have war anymore. All these things are so ideal. It's very hard to visualize, let alone be worried about it on a regular basis. And therefore, I would like to say that that's the difference between Shachrit and Musaf. Shachrit is real. Musaf is the ideal. And let's see if what I just said manifests itself in Jewish law, because I can say whatever I want, but if I can't prove it from Jewish law, then from my perspective, it's rather useless.
אנחנו עמדנו בפני הערים החשופים, אני אומר להם, מה אתם רואים? שותקים. אמרתי להם, אני רואה כאן תנועה של תלמידים רצים בית מדרש, הכל חי עם פנימיות. אחר כך ניגש אליי אחד המלווים ואומר לי, יהודה, איזה לוקשן אתה מוכר כאן תלמידים. מה אתה מספר? אומר לי, ימינו לך, מאי, כאן יהיה משהו.
My Rebbe, Rav Avital, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, stood in where we live today, Gush Etzion, there was nothing here, and basically says the following words, Vayarata makom erachok, when Avram took his son Yitzchak to the Akedah, to the binding of Yitzchak, he saw the place from afar. Ma ra'a? Ra'a anan kashur bahar. He saw what we call today Har HaMoriah or Har HaBayit, and he saw that particular mountain has a cloud over it. Amar li Yitzchak, he said to his son, Bini, or Eata Mashani Ro'ed, do you see it? Amar lo hein, I do. Amar li Shtei Na'arav, but he told the other two people with him, Ro'im atem Mashani Ro'ed, Amru lo lo. We don't see anything different from that mountain versus the other. Ho'il v'chamori no Ro'ed v'atem etem Ro'im, Shvu lachem po'in amachamor. So, because you didn't see anything special about that mountain, you stay here. And as the Pasuk says, Va'ani v'hanar nilcha ad ko, only me and Yitzchak will continue. Said my Rebbe Rav Amital, based on what you just saw, when I was here with a group of students in 1968 or 9, and I said, look at this mountain, what do you see? They said, realistically, we see a barren mountain with rocks. That's it. Not to mention the fact that our shoes are getting dirty, because there's no paved paths. That's what we see. My Rebbe Rav Amital says, that's not what I see. I see the ideal. I see a big yeshiva, and I see dormitories, and I see children, and I see grandparents, and I see parents. And the person that was with this group said to him, Rav Amital, with due respect, as we say in Hebrew, Atim koli lokshin, don't sell me a lokshin kugel. With due respect, there's not going to be anything here. With what are you talking about? And Baruch Hashem, he was wrong, this particular person. But I would say that the person that was with the group, he was a Shachris Jew. All he saw was with what's with in front of his nose. On the other hand, Rav Amital, my Rebbe, saw above and beyond the realistic world in front of him. He saw the ideal. He saw what could be. And indeed, in Shachris, we deal with the realistic. But in Musaf, let's see a few things that we say. First of all, those words, Keter Yitnu Lecha, that we started with. I'm not dealing with those words. I want to deal with the rest of that sentence. Malachim Amone Mala Imamcha Yisrael Kevutzei Mata. Yachad Kulam Kedusha Lecha Yishaleishu. So these words are not just a nice song. They're actually words. And they mean that we, the Jewish people, the mortals, the flesh and blood down here, we are in unison with the angels up there. We're in unison with the angels where? When do we say these words? When is the Jewish people in unison with angels? There can only be one place, not in Shachris, in which we deal with the real. Because Malachim, angels, don't have those realistic concerns of enough money in the bank, enough knowledge to get through the day. They're dealing with the ideal world of heaven. So only in Musaf, when the Jewish people talk about the ideal, can we utter these words of Imam Chai Yisrael, Kevutzei Macha Yachat, Kulam Kedusha Lecha Yishaleishu. Only in Musaf, when the Jewish people transform themselves from the real to the ideal, they could say, oh, now we're like the angels, who also are only in the ideal realm. Only in Musaf we say words that are so unrealistic. And Baruch Hashem, in the year 2021, Shehechiyanu V'Kiyimanu, that these words became a little more realistic. But we're not there yet. V'karev Bizureinu Miben Agoyim, Unefutzoteinu Kanes Miarkete Aretz. I have a theory that I've said around my Shabbos table many times. And that is that when we compose songs to various parts of davening, it's usually the parts of davening that are so far-fetched that only if you sing it in a song will you even believe it. And indeed, for many generations, you're sitting in Poland, in Lithuania, in Morocco, in all these far-fetched places. You really believe that God's going to gather all the exiles to one place? You really believe that there's going to be a time again, v'sham na'aseh lefanecha et korbanot chavoteinu, that once again, we're going to have a Beis HaMikdash and a Mizbeach, and we're going to bring sacrifices, and there'll be Kohanim and Levim and Yisraelim all in unison? Very hard to believe, but only in Musaf, when we deal with the ideal, and there do we say these words. On Rosh Hashanah, we only in Musaf, even though this is said every day at the end of davening, only in Musaf do we say the words, we're going to look forward to a time where there'll be one God, not a God of jihad, but a God that's going to be a God of loving kindness. And there won't be any Buddhism or any other idol worship. It's only going to be V'chol b'nei basar yikru b'shmecha. Malchuyot, zichronot, and shofarot that we add to the Musaf, and only to the Musaf on Rosh Hashanah, talks about the ideal world. Not the realistic one, but the ideal one, where God's name's going to be one. He'll be the king over the entire world. Once again, we're going to hear that shofar blowing with Mashiach coming. These things are not realistic. These things are ideal. And it's only in Musaf. So indeed, I think I've proven that Musaf is indeed transformative. It takes you out of the real and puts you into the ideal, even if it's only for a few minutes. And even on Rosh Chodesh, for those 10 minutes we daven Musaf, the silent and then the Chazan's repetition, we're transformed from the real into the ideal. And therefore we take off our tefillin, and we can imagine we're up in heaven with the angels who don't wear tefillin, and ultimately can imagine an ideal world where every Jew is identified as a Jew, even without the tefillin on. Just like on Shabbos and Yom Tov, where we walk around in our Shabbos clothing and the whole world is on their phones and they're getting WhatsApps and they're answering emails, and we're not there. We're in our ideal world of eating, of resting, of Divrei Torah, of davening, of learning. Only in Musaf will that happen, not at Shachris. So at Shachris, you wear your tefillin. At Musa, for those 10 minutes, you're in another realm where there's going to be a Beis HaMikdash again, and there's going to be peace in the world, and there's going to be an ideal reality once again. If this is correct, then indeed, I believe that there's no better way or better day of the year that we commemorate the Yahrzeit of my father. And this picture of my father at the Kotel with his tefillin on, kissing it, I believe depicts him more than anything. And I'll explain. On the one hand, he was someone very realistic. He worked as a hospital administrator. He had to be part and parcel of this world. And indeed, anyone that knew him knows very well that part and parcel of his persona was fixing things. Fixing things, namely, I have something realistically in my house that's not working. My refrigerator, my dishwasher, my printer, my computer, whatever it might be, has to be fixed so I can use it. That's realistic. But on the other hand, he was also a builder. He liked building bookshelves. And he liked getting new gadgets and using them. He'd like to not just talk about what I have, let me improve, but rather, ideally, what I should have, a better bookshelf, not the old one where I'll fix up with a few screws, a much nicer garden, a much nicer house inside. And he was constantly thinking, how do I make this better and more ideal? Not just fixing what I have, but making it more ideal. Or to paraphrase it, it wasn't just about repainting a wall that was already there because it had spots on it or whatnot. It was about knocking down that wall and rearranging the entire house, which he's done and did numerous times. And therefore, it was very interesting to me that the machzer that he held in his hand is the machzer you see in front of you, the Machzor HaMikdash. And all the Yomim told him, this was the set of machzorim he davened with. He didn't just daven for the real, today is Yontiv, but rather for the ideal, there'll be a Beis HaMikdash one day, and these pictures will indeed be not paintings, but real pictures that will be realistic once again. So I believe that that was who my father was amongst many things. He dealt with the real, but he always aspired for the ideal. And that would explain how he lived his life by fixing what was, but yet building what wasn't as of yet. And indeed, there's one day a year, in which we sort of combine the ideal with the real. And that's only one day a year. The only day a year in which you say the Musaf Kedusha, even at Shachris, even at Mincha, and even at Ne'ilah. Which day am I referring to? I just gave the answer.
Yom Kippur.
Only on Yom Kippur. When we're totally like angels. We're not even in the realistic world. We're not eating. We're not drinking. We're not even wearing leather shoes. We're totally like angels. On that day, you can say the Kedusha of Musaf, even at Shachris. Because that's the one day a year with the ideal and the real combined together. And that's what the Mate Moshe says. The Mate Moshe, who lived in Krakow, so we're talking about the student of the Maharshal, who was the student of the Ramah, he says the words that we say on Yom Kippur. B'chol arbar tefilot lefi sho'omrim bo mishartov sho'olim zeh hazeh ayeh mekom kvodo, ki af ha-malachim lo yadu mekomo mitoch shekvodo oleh v'nigba. Ve'en shayach lomar mimkomcha. Shachris on Shabbos, we say the words, Mimkomcha Malkeinu Tofia, from your faraway place, God, please come back to us. Namely, God, we're in the realistic world. God, you're in the ideal world. Please come back to us. That's Shachris. In Musaf, we don't say that. We say Mimkomo. There's the Mate Moshe. There's only one day a year where they combine into one, and that's Yom Kippur. But outside of that day of the year, we have a Shachris and a Musaf. We have the real and the ideal. And even on the same day a year, a Jew can be both. He, on the one hand, can deal with the realistic problems in front of them. And on the other hand, dream and aspire for it's, all the ideal that it's yeah. not yet part and parcel of the world. And therefore, I believe that if there's any legacy that I think we can take from the lifetime and the lifestyle of my father would be that. Namely, I believe that in his life, the very decision to make Aliyah in 1988, the time when it was totally not in the vogue to make Aliyah, was based on that. He could have continued living in America and deal with the real, and Bezrat Hashem continued to live a Jewish lifestyle. We lived in a very Jewish neighborhood. But he wanted to go to the ideal. And the fact that his soul aspired to live in Israel was part of his soul saying, I don't want to only deal with the real. I want to also aspire and do what I can to get to the ideal. And that's living in Israel. And in my opinion, that's the legacy that I think we can take with us every Rosh Chodesh. We have to deal with the real problems in the world and they're right in front of our nose. And yet we also have to deal with the ideal. We don't just have to eat a Shabbos meal because we're hungry. Shabbos meal, add Divrei Torah to it and add Zmiro to it, talking about an ideal world.
I'm not crying. Just happy.
In front of us. So Bezrat Hashem, I hope and pray that we'll be able to do that throughout our lifetime. I will explain to you why it was so important to the family to actually dedicate a yekid in his honor. Because anyone that drinks wine knows that when he takes the wine to his hands, he's in the ideal in the real world. The minute he drinks a little bit, he transforms to the ideal world. All of a sudden, there's a smile. All of a sudden, he's no longer in this world. He gets a little tipsy. Maybe he starts singing. That's what wine can do. It can transform you from the real to the ideal. And that's the legacy that I think my father lived by. And that's the legacy that I hope that we can all continue down here in this world as he continues it, Bezrat Hashem, in the next world. Yeh Nishmato, Nishmat Tzvi Meir Ben Moshe Yonatan, Zichrono Livracha, Tzrura, his legacy be intertwined with that of the living for many more years in health and in happiness.